Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, April 24th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Allie Martin.
And I'm Stephen Humphreys.
Our senior congressional correspondent, Krista Case Bryant, spoke with Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, and visited with people in his hometown of Bakersfield, California.
Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was waiting for us on a simple chair, sitting sideways with an arm slung over the top while he pecked at his phone with the other hand. When I and a couple of local reporters walked in, he yawned, popped a Listerine strip into his mouth, and ambled up to the cameras. We were in his hometown of Bakersfield, California, but his spiel sounded just like everyone I'd heard him give on Capitol Hill. We asked a few questions, and then the press guy said, "That's all the time we've got, guys." And then something changed. It was like the play had ended and the actor came out to say hi. He asked me whom I'd interviewed and explained why people here are wary of reporters who fly in from out of state. "They already have a preconceived notion about us, right?" said Speaker McCarthy, who added that those preconceptions always end up baked into the story, no matter how long his friends spend with a reporter. They feel burned time and time again, because it's almost like people already have the story written. And indeed, Washington's centripetal forces affect journalists as much as politicians, creating narratives that are hard to break out of. So I find it always helps to visit a lawmaker's turf. I went out to the oil fields of Mr. McCarthy's district, drove around with a farmer as a crop duster buzzed her pickup truck, and hung out by the tables in the back of the Bakersfield Republican Women's Luncheon, where there were gift bags for new members, buttons like, "Don't let me vote Democrat when I die," and a woman named Penny collecting donations to address human trafficking in the city. In this week's cover story, you can hear from people who have known Mr. McCarthy for decades and worked closely with him, and decide for yourself what kind of leader he is.
Now, today's stories. Our first story. Getting outside the Beltway and understanding the place and people who shaped Speaker McCarthy gives insight into his approach to governance.
Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy is facing his first high-stakes test, with the U.S. $31.7 trillion in the red and on pace to hit the congressionally mandated debt limit by mid-June. President Joe Biden and Democrats say Congress needs to raise the limit to avoid a potentially catastrophic default, while Speaker McCarthy and Republicans are demanding spending cuts in return. If Mr. McCarthy can hold his caucus together to leverage a deal, it will be seen as a big victory. That won't come as a surprise to those who have known him for decades, who cite his knack for bringing people together and unparalleled work ethic honed as a firefighter's son in Bakersfield. What gets lost is his ability to create a team, people working together for a common good, says high school football teammate Marshall Dillard. Others, however, say the choices he made, including embracing Donald Trump after the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, have left virtually no vestige of the Kevin McCarthy they once knew and admired. Many in Washington are bracing for a big thud, if not disaster. Still, sometimes in politics, low expectations can be a good thing. Sometimes it helps to be an underestimated guy from an underestimated place. This story was reported by Krista Case Bryant in Bakersfield, California, for The Monitor.
What do Russians want? Sociologists struggle to make sense of their responses to their opinion polls, knowing that opponents of the authoritarian government are reluctant to express themselves.
If local opinion polls are to be believed, the overwhelming majority of Russians support the war in Ukraine and its architect, Vladimir Putin. But are they to be believed? That's what the Russian sociology community, inside and outside the country, is struggling to determine. Many say the polls cannot be taken at face value, and that pollsters need to use more sophisticated methods to give proper weight to government opponents who might be afraid to express themselves. A number of independent polling agencies are doing just that, asking nuanced follow-up questions to try to round out a more accurate picture of Russian society. Some of them have concluded that most Russians are simply depoliticized, trying not to think about current events. Many citizens appear to have followed the path of what has become known as internal emigration, remaining physically in Russia, but mentally and politically absent. The fact that their views are accessible is remarkable. Russia is the only country in the world that still conducts independent polling while being a dictatorship, says one Russian pollster. But, she adds, in truth, we don't really know how many people genuinely support Putin and the war. This story was reported by Fred Weir in Moscow for The Monitor.
A civil lawsuit against Donald Trump starting tomorrow could renew focus on his alleged pattern of sexual misbehavior, and it piles atop other legal challenges facing the former president.
Former President Donald Trump's legal problems could deepen this week with the scheduled opening of a New York trial on allegations he sexually assaulted journalist E. Jean Carroll in a dressing room some 30 years ago. The case involves civil charges, unlike the historic criminal indictment of Mr. Trump earlier this month. The former president has emphatically denied the alleged assault and suggested Ms. Carroll invented it to increase sales of a 2019 book. But with trials and pending trials beginning to multiply, Mr. Trump and his lawyers face the prospect of lurching from one courtroom to the next, defending against an array of cases of varying levels of seriousness. The lawsuit brought by Ms. Carroll is the second she's filed against the former president. Both suits charge Mr. Trump with defamation, and the second adds in a battery claim. The first lawsuit has remained stuck while courts wrangle over whether Mr. Trump was acting within the scope of his duties as president when he spoke to the press in 2019 and denigrated Ms. Carroll. The second suit, the one set to start tomorrow, focuses on statements Mr. Trump made after he left office in January 2021. The story was reported by Peter Greer for The Monitor.
How can community college students master basic skills and prepare for jobs at the same time? Washington State offers a model that supports success and dignity. The Monitor, in collaboration with six other newsrooms, is examining the challenges facing U.S. community colleges and potential solutions in a series called Saving the College Dream.
For students who don't do well on community college placement tests, the standard practice is to make them take pre-college classes in their weak subject, essentially a repeat of high school. But Washington State has seen success using a different approach, providing two teachers in a classroom, one who focuses on job training and the other who teaches basic skills in reading, math, or English language. More than 6,000 technical and community college students in Washington are enrolled in the state's Integrated Basic Education and Skills Training Program, whose acronym is IBEST, initially piloted about 20 years ago. The program is so successful, particularly in terms of students who go on to get a degree or certificate, that 12 states have implemented or are in the process of implementing an IBEST model at one or more education institutions. For students, the opportunity to work with multiple teachers is a draw. Former Navy cook Terica Purvis, who is back at school full-time in her late 20s to earn a nursing degree, says she doesn't think she would have passed a recent chemistry course without the IBEST support. They couldn't have picked a better second instructor, she says. We needed her. She had to be there. This story was reported by Ellen Dennis in Everett, Washington, for The Monitor.
The reading life is an inspired one, and this month's books bring empathy, courage, insight, and a new work highlighting an extraordinary life that should never have been forgotten.
It is only with the heart that one can see rightly, What is essential is invisible to the eye, wrote Antoine de Saint-Exupéry in The Little Prince. This month's nonfiction selections delve into the extraordinary life of a man who was born on a slave ship but was determined to chart his own course in life. The unexpected courage of a banker determined to do what was right rather than what was authorized, and what Helen Keller chose to do after the miracle. Another author looks at the real price, often paid in pain, of luxury goods, while two writers argue that in America, to achieve lasting change, you might want to start gradually. Our fiction reviewers, meanwhile, have selected a multi-generational family saga about restaurant owners in Minnesota, a sprightly second-chance rom-com, a mystery set during Queen Elizabeth II's coronation, and a profound novel about creating art and finding home through a West Bank production of Hamlet. You can find our Monitor reviewers' list of the month's 10 best books in today's issue.
Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on Ukraine's drive to put Putin on trial. An expert spokesman for his country, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky has lately begun to give speeches to countries such as Mexico in the global south. One key message, as he told Mexican lawmakers on April 20th, help us defend the important principles of territorial integrity and protect the rules-based international order. Mr. Zelensky needs support from countries like Mexico in his drive to put Russian President Vladimir Putin on trial for a war of aggression, or the invasion of Ukraine in February of last year. If a substantial majority of the United Nations General Assembly votes to set up a special tribunal for that particular crime, dubbed the mother of all crimes, it would be another moral victory that could help Ukraine win the war. It would also affirm a global norm against cross-border invasions. European leaders are now in intense discussion to back such a court, but it will be former colonies in the global south that will be key to putting the crime of a war of aggression on the international agenda. So far, they're giving a willing ear to Ukraine and to its call to rally around a principle essential to peace. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thanks for starting your week with us. Please come back tomorrow when we'll have a story on why President Joe Biden wants to run for re-election. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how recognizing that we are created to express spiritual qualities from God brings inspiration, wisdom, and meaning to our tasks. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Sarah Lang.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.